Over Under Movies and all the Playlist podcasts are sponsored by Mubi, a curated online cinema streaming a selection of exceptional independent, classic, and award-winning films from around the globe. Mubi's film experts handpick every single film they show. Each day, they present a new gem, and you have 1 month to watch it. Plans start as low as $5.99 a month. Visit mubi.com/theplaylist to start a special 30-day free trial. Mubi's current highlights include Contact High and Joanna Hogg's Archipelago, starring Tom Hiddleston. Also, Mubi's first major theatrical release in the U.S., The Happiest Day in the Life of Ollie Mackey, is now playing in select theaters and will be expanding to additional cities in coming weeks. This beautiful finished film, shot in stunning black and white 16mm, won the Un Certain Regard competition at the Cannes Film Festival last year. It's based on the true story of Finnish boxer Ollie Mackey, who had a shot at the world featherweight title in 1962. The film has received absolutely glowing reviews, including a critic's pick seal of approval from Manola Dargis at the New York Times. Listeners can visit OLLIMAKIfilm.com for more information and theater listings. Once again, that's OLLIMAKIfilm.com for more information and theater listings. Now, on to the show.
Over the line!
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Over Under Movies, the podcast in which we choose one overrated movie and one underrated movie, similar in tone, genre, style, or however we may see fit, and we discuss them. I'm Ryan Oliver.
This is Oktay Ege Kozak.
And today we have Oktay's picks, and this is going to be a very fun episode, also like a very graded on a curve type episode, because we're going to be discussing...
Don't take our picks seriously.
No, please don't. We, Oktay teased these on our last episode. We're going to be diving into two movies specifically, but we're going to dive into the broader topic of so bad they're good movies. Oktay and I, you know, you and I are both huge fans of so bad they're good movies. We were fans of shows that talk about so bad they're good movies, like the How Did This Get Made podcast or Red Letter Media's Best of the Worst series. Mm-hmm. Like we're very big fans of just noble failure. Like there's something about noble failure that that is attractive.
And
to
noble
us.
Failure is the key here that we're gonna get into the difference between the two films, But yes. Yeah, go ahead and introduce them.
Absolutely. So, like, we'll just dive right in. So, the two films we'll be discussing is Amir Shervan's schlock masterpiece Samurai Cop from 1989. We'll also be talking about the overrated, which is Sharknado, which I think debuted on the Sci-Fi Channel in 2013. And I feel like there's been one every year since.
I think so. There's a fifth one coming out this year.
Oh, dear God. Okay, well, let's just start there. So why? so like, you know, these are both like objectively bad movies. Both of them are. But so what makes Sharknado so like egregiously bad as opposed to Samurai Cop?
So I kind of picked Sharknado as this placeholder or scapegoat, if you will, to generally talk about what makes a so bad it's good kind of hilariously, entertainingly inept, schlocky film that comes around once in a lifetime, and kind of a PSA about the difference between that and films that are made intentionally crappy, films that are intentionally campy or kind of cash grabs revolving around a certain schlocky or self-awarely stupid idea that tries to kind of capture this kind of stoner demographic or people who love watching things ironically or people who just want to get drunk and Sharknado is kind of like the apex of that these days. I mean, there's always stuff like that going around where people sometimes come up to me or friends who know that I love bad movies but who are not like you, like people like you who understand the nuance, the pretty big nuance between films like Sharknado and films like Samurai Cop that we're going to get into. that would come up to me and say like, "Hey man, you love bad movies. You know, what'd you think of Sharknado?" Like I got that a lot around the time when the first one came out, and it was a big kind of viral internet deal where people were just like tweeting at each other how ridiculous this movie is and all that stuff. And I was just kind of like I sought it out. I never seek out these like shitty asylum mockbusters or the sci-fi Sharktopus, Pterodon, the dinosaur squid or whatever the fuck movies. Like I never actually seek them out because they're actually made to be kind of quick, cheap, silly. I think they're made mostly, most of them are made by Asylum or by Roger Corman's company. And it's that kind of semi Roger Corman spirit, but with the kind of a very kind of cynical approach where they're like, "Oh, these idiot stoners will eat up anything. Let's just make it as silly and cheap and quick as possible and just put it out there." And my intention of kind of picking these movies for this episode is to kind of tell friends and family of people like me who love so bad it's good movies to kind of maybe instruct them or educate them about the difference between legitimately bad, funny, fun bad movies and films like Sharknado that tries to kind of capture this kind of audience in a completely self-aware way, which kind of completely defeats the purpose. So I thought of Sharknado as the placeholder for that, but you can kind of apply it to Sharknado 2, Sharknado 3, the Ghost Shark, whatever kind of self-aware, intentionally, badly, cheaply made movie you can think of. And they're mostly like bad B monster movies, mostly around, "Hey, let's take a squid and a snake and a shark and then put it all together," kind of thing. And they shoot the whole thing in like Sharknado. It looks like it was shot entirely, completely in daylight with like with whatever shittiest, almost consumer grade digital camera they could get their hands on, and then just went into kind of rudimentary version of After Effects or something, and just put in all the effects. Like it just looks so cheap and shitty in an intentional way, and intentional is the key here. Like it's when it's intentional, that kind of defeats the purpose of like getting that kind of fun out of it. But what do you think about that? I mean, do you did you actually like catch up with it again, either with Riff Tracks or anything else? Did you catch up with Sharknado or any of the other movies? And what's your thought about that?
I did not rewatch Sharknado. I could not bring myself to do it. Even with the Riff Tracks, I was just like,
You're
I'm not.
completely forgiven.
No, I was like, I just can't. I can't do it again. And it's mainly like because there is a like studio manufactured cynicism to these movies, even though they're made on such like low budgets. They are like, I mean, the Sharknado movies are kind of like the Transformers movies of like the B grade shitty movies.
Yeah,
Like they're
like
made with.
shitty low budget Transformers,
Yeah, they're
basically.
made with such like little soul, little care to them. And yeah, they're like you said, they're made for people to eat up, and it's mostly like if it was just a crappy, intentionally bad movie, I probably like I'm with you, but I probably wouldn't be so up in arms. But the fact that it's made by Asylum, which I hate them. Like there's no other word to describe my feelings about Asylum because you know, not only is it like the Sharknado or the octopus versus the mega shark or whatever the fuck those things
And all the
are.
mockbusters.
Well, all the see, that's the stuff I hate is like the Transmorphers or like Alan Quartermain and the Temple of Skulls, which maybe poor examples because I don't like the movies that they're ripping off there. But like if somebody's walking into a Blockbuster, which is an old-fashioned statement, but or wherever, like a big box store. And they want to buy Transformers, like, and then they buy that instead. Like, they know that they are clearly banking on people not paying attention, which maybe that's partially on the person.
It's an entire industry. It's an entire business that's completely built upon old people with poor eyesight or people who are just like, ah, oh, this must be the same movie, whatever. Like a lot of general audiences, especially people who just look at movies as like escapism and just like casual entertainment, they don't really look too deeply into, oh, who's in this movie, who made the movie, what does the poster look like. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're even like vague on the title. I mean, I've seen this many times going to see a movie and buying tickets where people just decide on what movie to see while they're like at the line, while they're about to buy the ticket, and they're just like, they look at the name or a poster or something and they're like, oh, that looks interesting, I'll go see that. Like, that it's kind of catered to that audience, and I understand what they're doing, and I understand your hatred for that, because it's just this kind of icky, borderline con man-ish kind of cynicism.
It is. It feels like they're getting away with something. And it just, I don't like that. And so, like, the fact that it's like, yeah, Sharknado, to its bare minimum of credit, it doesn't pretend to be anything more than it. It's like the movie Pieces. It's exactly what you think it is. Like, that's like, which is a great bad movie, by the way. But, but you know, the Sharknado does not, at least, it doesn't pretend to be anything more than it is, but it's still like, just because I'm like, oh, those fuckers over at Asylum are just like sitting there like laughing and watching the money pile in. Whereas like, to get back to your original question, and I didn't rewatch Samurai Cop like this week, but I actually watched it in the last like month, so I figured I was probably good on there.
Oh yeah.
And Samurai Cop for me, like, it's that sweet spot where like I love genre movies made by a filmmaker who, like, English is not their first language, but like all the beats are there. Like, you clearly watch a movie like Samurai Cop or a movie like Dangerous Men, and you're like, all the beats for this type of movie are here, but there's just something so odd and off with them. That's why there's a charm to them, because mm-hmm. you could tell that the filmmaker involved like came and he wanted to make the movie that he set out to make and did for the most part, whether like it's wrongheaded or misbegotten, like whatever you want to call it, it's still the movie they wanted to make, and they're proud of that movie. So like those type of movies are enjoyable because you have empathy for the failure, I guess. You're like, you tried to make a movie.
That's true. Like you genuinely tried to make something good. There's this charm to it. You feel the empathy of, I think a lot of people who enjoy So Bad It's Good movies are kind of either struggling or aspiring filmmakers. You know, I am and you are.
Sure.
And who want to like get into this business in one way or another. And you know, there's like this kind of feeling towards, there's kind of this empathetic feeling towards like, you actually went out there and did it. Like, good for you. Like, yeah. This is a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to get a feature together, no matter how small the budget is, no matter how, like, what your situation is, what the circumstances are. You went out and, like, you did it. Like, you had absolutely no talent, and you were horrible at what you did, and you got a product that was the exact opposite of what you were intending.
But goddammit, you did it.
But you did it. And at the same time, it's like, so that's the, the intention, the original intention of the film itself is extremely important when appreciating a schlock masterpiece, a So Bad It's Good movie, is that you have to know that the intention was to make, for the filmmaker to make a good movie. That's why, and a lot of the times when it's like a kind of singular vision of someone who was like, this was like their passion project, they wrote it, they found the budget somehow, or they like, they basically like spent whatever's in their savings to put this thing together and just like brought it out there in its just like cheapest, shittiest form. That's what makes it so charming. So it's like this weird sweet stop spot between, okay, I understand the idea of, you know, I've never really came upon this, but like if someone says like, oh, you're just being mean because you're just pointing and laughing at someone's quote unquote failure. But the whole point of it is that a lot of people who enjoy these movies really don't look at it as a failure in the sense that it just failed to entertain or something like that. It's just that you just get a completely different kind of enjoyment out of it, you know, like before I picked, first of all, when I picked Samurai Cop, I was thinking of like, okay, what's an underrated So Bad It's Good movie that should kind of get out there and get the kind of respect that some of these other like So Bad It's Good movies are getting, as far as, you know, midnight screenings and conventions and people yelling out lines from the movie. What's a movie that's just so consistently hilarious in its badness that it should rival all those other ones? So when I came out with Samurai Cop, I was thinking of like something like The Room as the overrated pick, and just kind of pitting them together, which would kind of break my heart, because The Room really is the Citizen Kane of bad movies. I mean, that movie is, I completely understand the love for that movie. I completely understand why it's still selling out all the midnight screenings, and there's all the like Rocky Horror Show like kind of stunts that happen where you throw spoons and like, and but I was thinking of picking The Room as kind of like the overrated, even because of that, because that's the only one that people think of nowadays. I feel like there are so many more that we should just branch out a little bit. And I thought of Samurai Cop as the one, because that's the one that I've been kind of obsessed with the last couple of years. About, it's kind of the same thing. Like you brought up one of the elements of it, which is someone who wants to ape a certain genre, especially a certain like American genre. In the case of Samurai Cop, that's like Lethal Weapon style buddy cop action movies made on like a budget of like maybe $15. So there are all these like elements that come together into this perfect storm to make this terrible, shitty movie. And every one of them that apply to The Room actually exist also on Samurai Cop. Like a complete ineptitude for, first of all, the first number one, the most important thing is the intent. Like there has to be the intention of making a good movie. You know what I mean?
Yes, you have to have the intent. That's it, because when your intention is to bank on somebody's love of shitty movies, then you're not putting the care and the love into it yourself. And I think you make a good point that I think it's just a completely different experience, like this type of film goer who loves a movie like this, because we're not like, at least I don't want to speak for the both of us, but I'm fairly certain, at least for me, I'm not laughing at the filmmaker at all. Like, I may be laughing at the situation. I may be laughing at how like baffling and
And how
strange this,
awkwardly it's executed
and how
and all
awkwardly
that
the
stuff.
camera's framed and how awkwardly the scenes do not flow together whatsoever.
There's no color correction whatsoever.
No.
One shot is like pink, the other shot is orange.
But at the same time, I'm
Whereas
like,
indoors, daylight, you know.
But at the same time, it goes back to that thing we said of like, you did it. You went out there and you made a movie with whatever you had to do it. And so, no, I think intention. I think that there is a gray area. I think that there are certain movies, and it's mostly in the horror genre, but there are movies and I'll probably say in like the 80s, mostly like the 80s, 90s, like VHS boom, that like might have been made like intentionally shitty, but are still enjoyable. Like I'm having
It has to have a
trouble,
charm. It
but
has
it
to
has
have
to
this
have a
kind of
charm.
charm of people. Maybe the people at the top level, the producers, the studio, were all cynical and kind of thinking of it like, oh, let's just shit out. Like there were all these like kind of Italian Mad Max ripoff in the 80s, and there were all kinds of like monster movies. There were all kinds of sword and sandals, like sorcery, like fantasy, Dungeons and Dragons type stuff, especially in the 80s. There were tons of those. So maybe people on top of who were like on the top level, like the producers and money people, were like, oh, we'll just make a quick buck out of this because we'll just like sell the shitty movie. But you still get the feeling that like you watch these movies, and not a single one of them come to mind right now, but there's like so many of them. Like for example, the Mystery Science Theater reboot had two of the two Wizards of the Lost Kingdom
Oh,
movies,
yeah.
like those, like that kind of stuff. But then you can still see the people kind of towards the bottom, like the people who were in charge of the film, people who were in charge of the effects, or like who were giving like no money, and they tried to come up with something that could look like a creature or some kind of magical spell or like optical effects. Like you can tell that there was like actual kind of plucky ingenuity involved, and that's the stuff that feels charming. That's sure. the stuff that feels.
I'm thinking of a movie cute. Like I'm thinking of a movie that I love. I love unironically, and you know my unabashed love for this movie is the movie The Visitor.
Yes.
Where it's like, you know, the producers clearly wanted to make a ripoff of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and The Bad Seed and The Birds. Like it's sort of like an amalgamation of all these movies, but the movie is so like insanely strange and odd and has this weird like otherworldly quality to it, to where it like feels like its own original thing, even though it's being like ripping off a bunch of movies that you know.
But it looks like that weird kind of David Lynchian feel that you get out of the movie that just feels like this kind of like nightmare vision that's like truly surreal and off-putting, weird but like kind of fascinating at the same time. I think you just get the feeling that was completely by accident. Like the production was obviously a clusterfuck. They just tried to put together whatever footage they had to any kind of a narrative, and just as like blob came out of it. And that's the kind of stuff that's like so fascinating for on films like that, where it's like you can see where everything started going wrong, but people just kept going like forward, goddammit. They were just like, we're gonna finish this movie.
Well, yeah, they're like we're not gonna, we've already spent the money and the time, like we're gonna finish it out, and it's fantastic.
like an example of that, going back to Samurai Cop, is you know, it's just a quick recap of Samurai Cop is basically Lethal Weapon. You have the white crazy Mel Gibson character, and you have the older black partner going after these kind of whatever. I have no idea what the criminals do. I think they're drug dealers, and they're also part of the Yakuza, whatever. And one of the bad guys is like obsessed with putting decapitated heads on his piano, which is a classic line.
Now I'm telling these son of a bitches that we respect the Japanese of this country, who are honest businessmen. And yeah, this is the land of opportunity for legitimate business, not for death merchants who distribute drugs to our children through schools and on the streets. Now I'm telling these motherfuckers that if they continue killing our children to make their precious millions that they deposit in their secret Swiss bank accounts, counselor, before your lawsuit even gets off the court clerk's desk, I'll have their stinking bodies in garbage bags and ship them back to Japan for fertilizer. Got it?
The concept, the premise is incredibly simple. Apart from that, is the samurai cop played by, I mean, it says on IMDb it says Matthew Carreras, but I know
it's
that the
Matt
guy's
Hannon.
Name is Matt Hannon. That's his name. So played by Matt Hannon is supposed to be like this amazing. It's quote-unquote samurai cop who was just like great, you know, trained in Japan to be a samurai. You never see him fight pretty much
except until the end of the movie,
except until the very end of it. And he's supposed to be like trained in this like the ancient Japanese arts, so you expect that guy to be like knowledgeable about Japanese culture, but he's like insanely racist.
Yeah.
He just keeps calling like he can't pronounce like Japanese names, and he just like always like kind of like brash rednecky about like the people that he tries to capture, like all this Yakuza. So that's kind of like the premise, but it's basically what makes it so special is basically that element that makes The Room so special as well, is that it's made by a foreigner, an Iranian film producer, who was actually a pretty successful producer of like melodramas and romance movies in Iran. He didn't make action movies. Who came to America, and he had this idea of like, yeah, I'll go make one of these like Lethal Weapon, you know, one of those 80s big brash action movies with the muscular buff dude like shooting at bad guys, and it has all of the elements and all of the cliches of those movies.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's like, yeah, it sets up this buddy cop dynamic, but it just has the big broad character beats. It doesn't have the like or the plot beats, excuse me. There's no like character really development. Like the characters just kind of that like another staple of a, you know, bad movies, every bit of dialogue is on the nose. Everyone says what they're thinking at any time. There's no subtlety. There's no room for any of that.
And it's this perfect storm. It's this perfect storm of like the director. This is the thing with Tommy Wiseau as well. First of all, like when English is not your first language, English is not the director's first language. And on top of that, the director is so kind of self-absorbed that that he doesn't take notes. Maybe from I'm sure like this. I know this happened on The Room because of the Disaster Artist. If you read that, that a lot of people came up to Tommy Wiseau and said that this makes no fucking sense. Like you have to. This is not how people talk. This is not even like good English. This makes absolutely no sense. And then he was just like, no, this is my vision. This is what I'm sticking to. This is what I want to do. And this like that creates this perfect storm of like not only complete kind of incompetence in recreating the kind of language of this genre they're trying to ape, but also kind of going about it completely in their own way, which creates like Samurai Cop has these amazing gem lines and scenes that wouldn't have existed if someone came up to him like did like a little bit of a script edit and be like, that makes absolutely no sense.
I was curious, and I'm sure you have, but I'm gonna ask this question anyway. Have you seen any of the other American films that this filmmaker tried to make, like Hollywood Cop or Young Rebels?
See, they're not as so there's this kind of, I feel like with these kinds of movies, you have to have a completely consistent level of just hilarity. And Samurai Cop has pretty much every 20, 30 seconds, there's something hilarious going on, either with the visuals, like there's overlong action scene where the cars are going like 12 miles an hour, so you're laughing at that. And on top of that, you're laughing at, you know, the cop saying, you know, shoot him, like 20 times in a row. And then someone gets shot and they try to, like, there's this hilarious bit where the guy they're chasing, like one of the guys like shooting at them from the van gets shot, and they're supposed to shoot that, they're supposed to make it look like the cop's car is running over the guy after he's shot. And they basically shot the first, like shot the guy like laying on the ground in front of the car, and they just shot that, and as you know, and they got like 10 feet in front of the guy, and then they just like turned the camera around, had the guy like lay at the back of the car.
Yeah.
And they just like there's no continuity. It's just like so obviously edited. So you have these amazing moments like that. On top of that, you have like you laugh at the bad color correction. You laugh at the performances, you laugh at the writing, like just like all this stuff comes together, and it's almost like distracting you long enough to make you forget that you're watching a really, really shitty movie.
Yeah, because it's entertaining.
It's incredibly entertaining. So it's like it has Samurai Cop has as many hilarious moments as The Room has, which makes it like infinitely rewatchable. The problem with Hollywood Cop and what was it? Death, I think it's like Death American Style, well, or something.
Killing American Style, which I have seen that one. And it's
yeah,
it
like is. Like. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's. I don't know about that one, if it's because, I mean, there isn't as much hilarity, and I'm not sure if it's because it's more of a, like, sort of hostage movie, or if it's because it's, maybe he tried to do a maybe more, like, difficult
like a
or
thriller,
dense. Yeah, like something that needed to be, like, have elements to be thrilling, whereas, like, a buddy cop movie, It's amusing because that's such a, it's such a digestible genre, and it's such a like oversaturated genre, and you know, like there are so many like mediocre buddy cop movies that are like merely just passable because of the chemistry between the leads, which is the literally the basic prerequisite for making that movie work to begin with. And
which
because,
in this case, those two guys are in completely different movies.
Yes, and they fail so miserably, and that's why it's funny. It's hilarious because they're like they're supposed to be the mismatched pairs, and they are, but they're not because the story tells them to. It's because the direction tells them that they're in the wrong.
The police
thing.
Chief is supposed to be like the typical like angry police chief, like yelling at them, but he just comes across as a mental patient.
Right, exactly. That guy's awesome. So it's like all the things that you know from these other, like from a genre that's so well worn and so, you know, it's ubiquitous, and so like it's easy to, I mean, and other than just the fact that it is hilarious because they just miss on so many levels with that movie. Whereas like Killing the American Style, yes, it misses the mark, but it also like I think because you like you said, it's trying to be a little bit more gritty. It's trying to do like a straight up thriller, and because it's like it fails at that, I still watch it with like admiration, but it's also but it's nowhere near as entertaining.
There are some really funny moments, but it definitely lags in that sense, and that was the point that I was coming to. It's like there's a huge difference between, you know, once a So Bad It's Good type of movie kind of doesn't have anything really funny or interesting going on as far as like its ineptness, like you laughing at its ineptness for like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, then you find yourself just watching a really cheap, shitty movie.
Yeah, it's true.
Which kind of like it's a weird line, but like once you cross that line, you feel like you kind of start feeling like, why am I watching this? This is like awful. And Killing American Style is definitely in that category where it's like it definitely has this hilarious moments, but you know, also like what you mentioned about the tone as well, like it's trying to be more of a gritty, like kind of home invasion thriller.
Yes,
it has like a bunch of rape scenes in it, and like it's not fun in that sense. It's like it's exploitative in the sense that you just feel a little bit icky. Yes. And when exploitation is done in a completely like clunky and just kind of shock value way, which he was trying to do, which it goes back to like Amir Shervan's vision of American films, where he just wanted to duplicate them without really understanding why each one of these cliches exist in the first place. It was just like a complete copy paste job.
You nailed that on the head, because like again with Samurai Cop, it is like he did set to make a crowd pleasing like buddy cop comedy action movie. Like that was the attempt with that movie. And this one is like it's exploitative because it is trying to have those elements that make a movie gritty or dark, and like you said, without really any of the understanding as to what makes those things gritty and dark. And so like there was one scene in particular that was like one scene I laughed, and then like the next one was like really gross after that. I feel like I'm trying to remember the exact scene, but I feel like there was a guy who had asked a woman to kiss him or to hug him or something, and he's like no, not like that, and just like the way he says it is like comical, but like then the implication,
and it's supposed to be like disturbing and like genuinely like off-putting, but it just comes across as like just totally awkward and weird.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it doesn't have as much to that, and I've watched a lot, like I've spent time at the psychotronic section at Scarecrow, and the bang action section. Like I've watched my share of like shitty action movies that I'm like, why am I still watching this? Like I bought a VCR just so I could watch certain ones that are not available yet on TV.
that's fucking dedication, right?
Dude,
there.
I
get
I'm
your
telling
stripes
you,
for that shit.
I have a problem, or the opposite of a problem, one or the other.
We're in the same club. I mean, why would I like even begin to judge you?
Oh, I know you're not. I'm just saying for the people who are like saying that I might
like,
need some help.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Exactly. Like, I've rented this Canon film called The Violent Breed based on its VHS cover, and I fell exactly...
I've seen that when I was a kid.
It's like this just Italian, First Blood knockoff, and I'm just and I'm like, why am I still watching this? And then the third act gets, like, really, like, crazy, and all these, like, insane set pieces happen, and I'm like, okay, that at least made my journey worth watching. But the first like 60 to 70 minutes, which a lot of bad movies, like, you know, you're in a bad genre movie where it's like, yeah, even if the last 20 minutes were worth it, like you have to sit through 60 or 70 minutes of just the most dullest.
Lots of filler and
filler.
Yeah,
that's
the thing that comes with, that's a typical thing that comes with schlock, because they have just enough money to pull off. Let's say we have enough money for, two car flips and three bazooka explosions.
Right.
And we don't have anything else, like zero budget. So the rest of the movie is just like a bunch of talking heads in a hotel room or something. So there's always that problem. There's always, you know, it's just like a really thin line between just boring and time wasting and a fucking masterpiece. Like once you pass that a certain level of like funny moments per minute threshold, Or just a certain level of like fascination with like what the fuck were they thinking? Like you're just watching this the whole time. We can get into this it a little bit. Like Dangerous Man is one of those movies.
I love that movie, and it's so, and It's funny
because it's not consistently hilarious. It's not. It's paced incredibly slow. Like, it's not entertaining in that way. But you're just like watching it with your mouth open, just going, "Why? What was going on? What were they thinking? Like, what's?" You're just baffled.
Well, and you're watching that movie, and you're like, okay, like, taking away the sheer ineptitude of this movie. If you were to boil that movie down to its basic like plot, it's kind of an interesting subversive idea. I mean, like, kind of like a Miss 45 or I Spit on Your Grave knockoff.
Yeah,
it's that
female revenge exploitation.
Right, but it's not a bad idea to be like, I'm going to go undercover as a woman of the night and just kill all the scummy, shitty men. But there are about, like, three disparate plot lines strung together so loosely on this one event. And
the same exact scene repeats, like, 2-3 times. Like, it's just...
It just doesn't make it, like, you're like, how does this all come together? And you're like, this could be really subversive, at least in its story, but it's just so inept. It's so baffling that it's amazing. And I actually think that movie, for the most part, is like pretty entertaining from beginning to end. Like, I think it's, you know, I have a few,
that, like, kind of like what the fuck value that it has. Like, you're almost watching like Dangerous Man. To me, is like, first of all, I will not be surprised one bit if that movie turns out to be like a hoax, like the Adult Swim guys, or that guy who did like the people who did like Too Many Cooks, or like these weird alternative comedy stuff. Like, if it turned out, I just like they just went out there and shot that movie like with a budget, the whole story, like made up this whole story of this like Iranian director, another Iranian director trying to make like an American genre film. I don't know what the hell that's about, but made up this whole story about this Iranian director making the movie over like a period of 20 years or something. I would be totally like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, if it happened, for sure. I don't know. I think the movie it's still made with such, again, I think it's made with intent. It's made with such like love that it's like, I mean,
I know it's legit, but it's so surreally bizarrely
put together.
So
comical, even from the credits, where it's like there's about 8 different credits and it's all the same guy.
Same guy,
John,
yeah.
S. Rad. But there's a
That's
few.
The thing. Tommy Wiseau has that too. Like, the room is like executive producer, writer, like all that stuff.
But yeah, these movies don't, like, the, you know, once you get a good one, like Dangerous Men for me, The Samurai Cop fits into that, The Visitor fits into that. Things fits into that.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Jesus Christ. I get more enjoyment showing that movie to people who haven't seen it just so I could watch the look on their face as the movie
Things
continues.
Is one of those Things is one of those movies where you don't say anything before putting it on. Anything.
No.
Like, just don't tell them like what the genre is, what it's supposed to be about, what's going on, because it just, like, for the first 10 minutes, it just looks like some drunk Canadian guy's home video.
It is. That's like, that
these people
is
got
the movie.
Shit-faced and they just like started shooting each other with a video 8 camera or something. And just look at your friends' faces just when they're like, what the fuck are you showing me? What is this?
I am under the impression that they shot that movie in sequential order, and that they got progressively
drunker
as it went along, and it stopped making less sense. And then the one guy, supposedly in the story, spontaneously combusts. He had to go to his swing shift at the 7-Eleven, and then he comes back to the movie inexplicably later towards the end. And I was like, okay, he's off work
now.
They're
like, we have to get rid of him. He had to go to his work shift. So it's like, why doesn't he just like spontaneously combust?
Exactly. But
they just got these, like, it just looks like they got these like alien knockoff rubber monster toys just decided to make a movie around it or something. Things is also another one of those that's like fascinating. But like you said, it's like these movies come around. There's like a handful of them that you can call like genuinely like schlock masterpieces, because they come around almost once in a generation where you're just like, okay, this is a perfect example of that, because it has to hit all of those notes that we mentioned. And it also has to be consistently entertaining or consistently fascinatingly bad. And yeah, like 99.9% of contenders for that throne are just bad movies where you just get a little bit bored at times, and they have some like high points, but you don't really like get into it because you're just like, yeah, this is just a shitty movie. For example, like one example of that is Oh man, what the hell is that? There's like this kind of yet another like First Blood ripoff that a lot of fans of bad movies,
Deadly Prey?
Deadly Prey. There you go. Of
Yeah,
course you know what Deadly Prey is. Like I just had to like explain it for like 2 seconds. Like to me, like a lot of people love Deadly Prey like that, but to me that's one of those examples where it's just like it has enough lulls, enough filler in between there, between the hilarity, to make me not want to like. I watched that movie. I enjoy it. I watched the Riff Tracks version of it and everything, but like that's not a movie that I'm gonna go back to like I do with Samurai Cop,
Sure.
because it's just like so like weirdly ineptly made, yet at the same time kind of works as a stripped down genre film. Films like Samurai Cop and The Room and Things and the ones that we mentioned are really rare in that sense because they just like hit that perfect sweet spot, and those are the ones that are usually. That I would say, people, if they want to come together and like watch a bad movie, and you're not really well versed into this like kind of weird schlock fetish that people like you and I have, that kind of we have the experience, so we know what to look for. Like I get every once in a while, like one of my like my friends know I'm into this stuff, so they'll send me like a YouTube clip or something of like, doesn't this look hilarious? And I'll watch it and I'll be like. No, this is like a Sharknado thing. Like
Sure.
it's made intentionally bad and there's no like soul to it and but a lot of people who are not into this like that distinction might be going into Sharknado and thinking that's the kind of epitome of that kind of so bad it's good movie. So I think it's like it behooves us schlock weirdos to kind of do this kind of a public service announcement and be like, no, these are the movies that like you should really like go rent Samurai Cop or watch it. It's on Amazon Prime, either with or without Riff Tracks. Or although I would completely recommend without Riff Tracks, just get into it uncut. And that's the movie, like not Sharknado. Samurai Cop is the movie. Like you get together and get high and drunk with friends and just like watch and just laugh your balls off.
Absolutely. And I think, but I do get I sort of get the appeal of something like Sharknado. And I know like not everyone's a weirdo like you and I, and those movies like Samurai Cop, to just, I guess, defend a little bit. Maybe the position of people who like those other movies is that like you and I, it's almost like a brain exercise watching a movie like Samurai Cop because, you're a screenwriter. I studied screenwriting in school as well. Like when you know the basic, like when you know plot mechanics and then you see them just not functioning, like you feel like a doctor, like you need to
You
operate
try
on
to,
it.
you're like reverse engineering it. Like, what was
Right.
the inception of this scene? Like, what could have possibly made them go from just the concept, just the idea, to like this finished product?
Right, exactly. And so like it becomes like a little bit more probably like more like a cinephile type thing. But at the
Yeah,
same
I can
time,
see that.
but at the same time, like even without that, the movie's hugely entertaining, like on its just own ineptitude. Like even the moments like of it trying to be funny, like usually Samurai Cop's also one of those rare occasions, before we wrap up, the one thing I want to say too is like there's almost nothing worse than a bad comedy or something that fails at comedy. And even like this movie's failure at comedy is funny. Like that's a feat. That is a tough thing to pull off because when a joke just dies, it usually just like you or whoever else is in the room, just the energy gets sucked out. But for some reason, this.
And the thing is that the jokes are so inept and horrible that they do a complete 360 and go back to being funny again. For a completely different reason. Like the nurse scene is an example of that. I think that scene was supposed to be because you have these like cutaways to his like the Danny Glover character like making these like goofy
Oh,
faces to the
God.
camera. Like the way it's made, it's just so awkward and weird, and you can tell that people who were involved in the scene were just like really uncomfortable. Like it's just the whatever comedy that was supposed to be taken out of that scene is just you get the exact opposite of levity. Like there was supposed to be a moment of levity and it just comes across as just uncomfortable and weird. And
Exactly.
that's what makes it so funny. And that's yeah, you're right. That's an incredibly hard thing to pull off.
Yeah.
So can you think of any other like any of your we mentioned The Visitor, we mentioned Things, which I know is like a favorite of yours and a favorite of mine as well. Are there any others that you would think of like recommending to people who are beginners into this field that comes to mind?
I can't think of any other ones. Like I said, The Visitor, definitely highly recommend. Dangerous Men, Things. And most of them are just like schlocky, like horror movies from that point on. Like the one,
Like you mentioned, Pieces,
like
that's a good one.
Pieces one. Chopping Mall's a little bit higher production quality, but I love that movie.
Yeah,
I mean that one's a Roger Corman one, so
that's
it's
more that's more in the in the in camp, but like enjoyable camp, yeah.
yeah, it's not quite in the like Sharknado like cynicism. It's like they were legitimately making a movie
Cheesy
that,
movie.
yeah, a cheesy movie, and they would like they for succeeded at it. What about you before we sign off? Are there any ones you
One of
want to
the major
recommend?
things that I would recommend would be like 70s and 80s Turkish mockbusters. You can
Of
find a lot
course.
of them on YouTube. Of course, they have a special personal relevance to me being Turkish and having grown up with these films, and they're kind of like they kind of popped my cherry in terms of like being into this kind of schlocky material, because you know these movies would just like pop up on just regular TV channels as not as like midnight movies or some cult movies. Like they would just pop up as like, oh, here's an action movie, or here's Turkish Star Wars or something like that. Like Turkish Star Wars is of course the king of those. You can just find that if you go to YouTube Turkish Star Wars. There's a really good like subtitled copy of it that you can watch, and it's impossible to, you know, like it's basically this period in Turkish cinema where Hollywood blockbusters were being released like a year or 2 years sometimes after their American release. So these film companies would kind of like put together, it's almost like that movie Be Kind, Rewind. Like they would just put together like incredibly shitty, cheap versions of these films, and the copyright rules were like really relaxed, so they would just like straight up like half the score in Turkish Star Wars, like Indiana Jones, for example.
Oh my God, when you
And
I watched that movie with you for the first time I
yeah.
saw that. It's
That
yeah,
was a trip too, huh?
it's crazy. It should be seen. It just to know
Yeah.
that it exists.
That's one of those that should be seen. So like seek out some of those like Turkish mockbusters, Turkish Star Wars. Turkish Star Trek is a little bit less entertaining because it's kind of supposed to be a comedy and it's hard to get the jokes because the jokes have like a Turkish context to them. But you know, there's just like Turkish ET where ET looks like an overgrown hacky sack with a tumor. You know, it's hilarious. There's a lot of those. I have this copy of Turkish Rambo, which is kind of a action masterpiece. Where they have like a plastic piece of bazooka that they pull with fishing wire out of a steel tube, and then they just have like two firecrackers explode somewhere else to like imitate the bazooka explosion. It's great. You know, so yeah, those a general thing about like Turkish mockbusters, you should definitely seek those out, but at the very least look up Turkish Star Wars, because that's a very very special kind of movie, I should say. So
It's
that's one of those. I would think of maybe Miami Connection. That's another one of those that's like
Oh yeah.
action movies from the eight, like someone trying to do like a martial arts action movie and making like this really weird kind of inept film. I don't know. Have you seen that one?
Miami Connection. Oh yeah, I've seen Miami Connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's another one of those like Samurai Cop or Dangerous Men, where like the filmmaker had a passion, and he was a taekwondo instructor or
Yeah, I had
like
no
the
experience making films, you
but
can
wanted to
tell.
make a movie, and it was like biker ninjas versus other ninjas of some sort, and it's
And like a taekwondo-based rock band or synth
yes
band,
yes
or
yes it was
yeah,
yeah
it's a bizarre movie.
it's pretty wild. Yeah, that's a good that's a good one too. Well, now that we've clearly reached the end of the episode, let's wrap up our 64th episode of Over Under Movies. As always, you can find us on theplaylist.net. We have to thank Rodrigo Perez for hosting us. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Over Under Movies. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud, however you get your podcasts. You can leave us a comment, a rating. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what we can improve on. Tell us we have shitty taste in movies. Whatever it is, you can.
Well, in the case of this episode, they're right. So
yeah, I mean, we can't argue at this.
That'd
point.
Be kind of redundant.
Your taste sucks. Well, yeah, we
yeah,
know.
That's the point.
We know. But before we sign off, I have to do some pitching for the next episode, which is going to be a Gore Verbinski double feature. Seems fitting since the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie will be out in a couple weeks, and Cure for Wellness, a movie I liked quite a bit that tanked horribly at the box office, will also be out on home video around the time that episode drops. But so we're doing a Gore Verbinski double feature for the overrated pick. As you probably could have guessed, it's going to be Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, the one that everyone likes. I still don't like it. So we will get into that. And my underrated is going to be The Weatherman from 2005 with Nicolas Cage. Look forward to that discussion. Signing off, this is Ryan Oliver. I'm a co-host of this podcast as well as the Playlist podcast.
Hey, signing off, this is Oktay Kozak. I'm a co-host of Over Under Movies, as you can see, and also a film critic and contributor to The Playlist, DVD Talk, Oregon Herald, and BayOutSpider.com.
All right, we'll be back with those next overrated and underrated picks in the next couple weeks. Thank you for listening.